come here, I often am not able to spend so much time. For example, this time I came and I'll be here only for 4 days and 3 nights. And obviously it's a very short time. I wish I could spend longer times here. Many a times Shruti Dharma Prabhu and Pranabandhu Prabhu requested me to come more frequently and spend more time. There were times when I even committed myself. I remember once I told them that I would come once every 2 months and spend about a month each time I come, which would actually mean spending about 6 months in England. And when I say that, I sincerely meant it. But when I tried to practically implement that plan, it didn't happen. And this year, it has been even more infrequent and shorter visits, mainly because I became very sick. Probably remember last time I was here, during our trip to Buckland Hall, I became very sick. And then when I went back to America, the doctors suggested that I don't travel so much and just stay at one place, because they felt that there was actually, physically I didn't have any problem, but my immune system became very weak. And as a result of that, I couldn't really cope with the viruses. Their point was, now when you go to a new place, not only do we have to deal with a new environment, but we also have to deal with new set of viruses. And my body was not able to cope with this new viruses, and I was being attacked and becoming sick whenever I went to a new place. And they suggested that I stay at one place and build up my immune system. And that's why I stayed in America for 3.5 months. And as a result of that, I had to cancel all my other programs that I had, travel plans. And I mean, that is the reality. Like, we are getting old, and the body will not be able to function the way we were functioning at one time. And as a result of that, we'll be able to give less time at different places, and eventually we have to leave. I mean, in this material nature, no one comes to live here forever. And so all this makes me think about my responsibilities and my abilities to cope with the responsibilities, or how am I going to execute my responsibilities. And so naturally it makes me think, and I just I'll share those thoughts with you tonight. Like, the first thing is that makes me wonder is the way we are giving initiation. We travel and go to different places, and now ISKCON has a policy that it is up to the candidate to decide who they would take initiation from, and there should not be any compulsion or any pressure or any canvassing. So now it is up to the individuals to decide who they want to take initiation from. And since it is ISKCON's policy, naturally, you know, we function in that way, like devotees become attracted or inspired by different gurus and they take initiation, and gurus are giving initiation and accepting disciples all over the world. And as a result of that, they're not really able to spend so much time with their disciples. And the same is the case with me. And if I look at a traditional system of initiation, then we see that in India, the tradition actually was that a guru used to have his ashram, and he used to live in the ashram, and different individuals used to approach him, and he used to guide them, he used to teach them in their spiritual life, he used to guide them. And this was the normal standard. And naturally, in most cases, the number of disciples were very limited, and the guru used to train the disciples, teach the disciples. Of course, there were some cases like Durvasa Muni. He had 64,000 disciples and he used to travel with them. These are some rare cases. The general standard was that a guru would have his ashram and he would have his handful of disciples and he would personally take care of them. But in today's context, I mean, in ISKCON, we see that the situation is very different. Like Srila Prabhupada actually created an institution that spread all over the world. And we are functioning in ISKCON as a part of ISKCON. And as a part of ISKCON, we are actually giving initiation. But because the society is so vast and we all are traveling, it is not virtually possible to train the disciples personally. And now I can say, at least for myself, that I dare to give initiation because because I'm functioning as a part of the society, as a part of the institution, and I dare to do that because I am confident that the institution, the way Prabhupada structured it, is taking care of the devotees. Like if we look at it, we will see that we are not really, say for example, I have very little to do in inspiring you in your spiritual life and bring you to Krishna consciousness. Actually, I have been introduced to practically all of you when you are already in Krishna consciousness. And then your spiritual progress also, in your spiritual progress also, I had very little to contribute. You all had been guided by the local devotees. Senior devotees had been guiding you. And for whatever reasons, some of you have decided to take initiation from me, and I gave you initiation, but still on a day-to-day life or in a more practical way, your spiritual life is being guided by the local devotees and the arrangement that has been made by the society. So when we have put all these factors together, then what do we see? We see that you all actually have been attracted to Krishna consciousness by the arrangement that Srila Prabhupada has made. You all have been attracted to Krishna consciousness by Srila Prabhupada and the arrangement that Srila Prabhupada has made. By Srila Prabhupada in the sense, although you haven't seen Srila Prabhupada, but you have been attracted to Krishna consciousness by his books, by his temples, by his devotees. So these are the factors that actually comprise the institution of ISKCON as such, where Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya. Like I mentioned about the guru and his ashram before, like this traditional culture actually is that a guru has his ashram and people get trained up by the guru. Now, the ashram actually is ISKCON and the guru is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada created this ashram. Now, when Srila Prabhupada was there, physically present, there was no problem. Like, everybody accepted that fact. That was, that was clear to everybody, that Srila Prabhupada was the guru. And after Srila Prabhupada left, Prabhupada actually created the structure that is making Krishna consciousness movement to function even in spite of his absence, because of the arrangement that Srila Prabhupada made. And the arrangement consists of Srila Prabhupada's temples, Srila Prabhupada's devotees, and Srila Prabhupada's books. And also Srila Prabhupada himself pointed out that the books are the basis. His books are the basis. Now, Srila Prabhupada's books are the basis of this Krishna consciousness movement through this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the institution that Srila Prabhupada has created. Now here we are actually functioning as, say, different individuals are rendering different types of functions. Like there are temples, and the temple has temple presidents. That is Prabhupada's arrangement. The GBCs are there, they're functioning as the managing authority of the society. And the spiritual masters are giving initiations, and they're also functioning as a guru, as a part of the institution. Like, say for example, I was not a spiritual master to begin with. Like, I, after Prabhupada's disappearance, different individuals were functioning as spiritual masters. At that time I was not an initiating guru. It's only later on, because the GBCs wanted me to give initiation, I'm giving initiation. And so here you can see my position as a spiritual master is not absolute. It is a relative position. So here I'm functioning as a part of an institution in which you all are also parts of the institution. Our spiritual progress depends upon our involvement with the institution. Like a very clear example is that oftentimes we notice that some devotees who are functioning within ISKCON, they're making spiritual progress. But when one leaves ISKCON, their spiritual life becomes affected. In most cases, I have seen they lose their spiritual life. So here we see the importance of the institution. Even big leaders, I have seen, when they left the institution of ISKCON, their spiritual life has been affected. Like when they came, when they first disassociated or disconnected themselves from ISKCON, at least to me, it seemed that they will carry on. Their spiritual life is not going to be affected because they're such powerful individuals. I even felt that some of them will create their institution and they'll carry on. And they tried, but I've seen they didn't succeed. So from big leaders down to just new bhaktas, we notice their spiritual life remain intact as long as they remain connected to ISKCON. And when they leave ISKCON, their spiritual life become affected. So the point that I'm trying to make here is, the basic point that I'm trying to make here is that in this context of ISKCON, one's spiritual life is not solely connected to his spiritual master, his relationship with his spiritual master. Rather, his spiritual master is functioning as an agent of this institution of ISKCON, and their spiritual life is solely dependent upon the institution of ISKCON. Like, for example, when a spiritual master leaves the society, it has happened in the past. Unfortunately, many senior devotees have, spiritual masters have fallen down from their spiritual standard, and eventually they left. But many of their disciples did not leave. They remained in ISKCON. And those who remained in ISKCON, their spiritual life was not affected. Although the guru fell down, but because the devotees remained in ISKCON, or those devotees who remained in ISKCON, their spiritual life remained intact. While those who left with the guru, their spiritual life was finished. Now what does it actually prove? Doesn't it prove that one's spiritual life is actually dependent upon one's relationship with ISKCON? And the guru, when he functions as a part of ISKCON, he is actually helping his spiritual life. But when the guru leaves ISKCON, and if the disciples also leave ISKCON, their spiritual life gets jeopardized. So, from this one point actually becomes very clear that our spiritual life began with our involvement with ISKCON, and our spiritual life continues due to our involvement with ISKCON. And ISKCON is an institution that has been most wonderfully established and organized by Srila Prabhupada. Now, let us consider another scenario. Actually, it is not just Srila Prabhupada's idea of this institution. We go back, we see it was actually the idea of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who revived Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement when it was practically lost. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the blueprint of the institution because he could foresee the importance of a spiritual institution or importance of an institution to successfully continue the propagation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself could not really implement it, but he just gave the blueprint, and the blueprint was the Namhat. The structure of Namhat, I don't know how many of you read that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave a very specific structure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, the institutionalization of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. He actually structured it as a, he gave it a corporate structure, to put it simply. In the corporate structure, the producer of the commodity is Nityananda Prabhu. And then he is giving the distributorship to different wholesalers or distributors. And then there are wholesalers. And in this way, that we get the whole structure. And like, isn't that a structure of a business? Like you get somebody manufacturing something. And then marketing department takes care of the marketing. And what does the marketing department do? They appoint different agents, right? Or distributors. And these distributors, Sanjay, what do? They appoint wholesalers. They sell it to the wholesalers. The wholesalers sell it to the retailers. And the retailers sell the product to the consumers. Now, don't you get a corporate structure here? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the person who gave Krishna consciousness or the holy name. The Krishna consciousness in the form of the holy name. And Nityananda Prabhu is the Mahajan. Mahajan, you can say the businessman. And then he is giving it out to the to the distributors and wholesalers and so on and so forth. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually gave a practical shape to that blueprint. And that structure was Gauriya Math. But in Gauriya Math, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed that they should continue the mission or continue the institution in a certain way. But unfortunately, some of his leading disciples could not really continue in that way. And as a result of that, that structure actually it became dysfunctional, if not collapsed. Now, individually they are continuing with their different temples and all, but that structure is not there, and the massive propagation of Krishna consciousness that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started, that didn't continue. And then Srila Prabhupada revived that plan of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the form of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Like what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted, that actually happened through Srila Prabhupada. Like he wanted Krishna Consciousness movement now to spread all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada did that. And then he structured the society exactly the way Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted. And the key to that structure, or the success of that structure, functioning of the structure, was the collective management. The devotees must function together. And that functioning together must begin from the top. That is, the leaders, the leading devotees, the GDCs must function together. Collectively, they should maintain and manage the society. And the temples are the units. Prabhupada did not want anyone to interfere too much into the temple management. Prabhupada didn't want the GBCs to interfere into the temple management. He rather wanted that the temple president should take the responsibility of the temple. The devotees who are in the temple, they should manage the temple. And the temple president is the leader, is the person in charge of the temple. And then in the temple there are temple devotees who are forming different departments, and there are different departmental heads, and in this way the structure was given. And the important thing was that the concept of collective management. Because if we fail to collectively maintain the society or manage the society will disintegrate. And when the society becomes disintegrated, then it loses its potency. Because our strength lies in our unity. The strength lies in our unity. The more united we become, the stronger we will become. What happened to Ramchandra today? So, anyway, now at least one thing is there, like ISKCON, in spite of so many difficulties, so many problems, ISKCON is still together. 26 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, is because of the collective endeavor to maintain the society. Individually, many, many leaders and many devotees had difficulties. Individually, I've seen many big, big leaders have had spiritual difficulties, they've fallen down. But ISKCON is still there. They, of course, affected the progress of this movement. They caused huge damage. But society is still intact. And that is the most positive thing. And we are seeing, although there are many, many onslaughts on this movement, many crises, many problems, many difficulties, but still ISKCON is there. And through all these difficulties, ISKCON is becoming stronger. Because difficulties come, and by the collective endeavor, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, when the difficulties are overcome, then ISKCON actually becomes stronger. Each time a difficulty comes, it seems to be, oftentimes it seems to be impossible to overcome. But then we overcome it, and then what is the result? ISKCON becomes stronger. And let's consider in UK what happened. Bhaktivedanta Manor. What an incredible difficulty this community had to face. When the local council wanted to stop this movement here. Like there was a struggle, and there was a crisis. To overcome the crisis, there was a struggle, and then there was victory. Right? And through the victory, what did you get here? The Jatra has become so much stronger, so much powerful, so much more powerful. Even asset-wise, it has become so much enriched. Like initially we had how many? 17 acres of land, and now we have 100 acres of land. Right? And Indian community became so much influenced by this movement today. So that is the positive benefit of a collective endeavor. Like who could actually withstand that onslaught individually?
They could not.
But because collectively everyone got together, the victory was there and the society became stronger. Now that is, it is very important that we recognize this fact. That first thing we have to realize that the importance of institution for this, for the propagation of Krishna consciousness in this age. Like personalities like Srila Prabhupada is very rare. Personalities like Srila Prabhupada comes once in a blue moon. And it is a personality like Srila Prabhupada who can create an institution like ISKCON. I consider Srila Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness movement within 10 years' time, right? Single-handedly he started and spread the movement. What Srila Prabhupada did in 10 years' time, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, although he gave us the institution, he gave us everything, but still, 26 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, how much did he achieve compared to what Srila Prabhupada achieved in 10 years' time? And that shows the incredible potency of Srila Prabhupada. And it is natural that we should recognize Srila Prabhupada's greatness and Srila Prabhupada's unique contribution and be grateful to him and continue to serve his mission to the best of our ability. Now on the other hand, what can one do? Like one can actually say, well, now I'm a spiritual master and I have my disciples and I am very powerful and I don't need to function under anybody. There's no need for me to follow or abide by any authority or come under any authority. Then what will happen? Like, I am just isolating myself from the institution. Instead of becoming a part of an institution, I am actually becoming a renegade. And first of all, that is not going to help the propagation of this movement. And this will weaken the structure. And ultimately it will hurt my spiritual life. Because ultimately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is watching. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is sitting in our hearts. And he is seeing, and when he sees that I am acting in the right way, he will be pleased. And as a result of that, I will make spiritual advancement. But on the other hand, if I act in a wrong way, then he will be displeased. And he will, and the natural result of that will be, I will not succeed in my spiritual life. And that applies to every one of us. Whether we are spiritual masters or whether we are devotees and even whether we are new bhaktas, what is important is that we learn to function under the institution or within the institution of ISKCON. Now when I, now I go back to the original point that I was making. Like, although I am functioning as a spiritual master and you all are looking up to me, I naturally feel very guilty when I can't really give that kind of time and association and guidance that I should give. Now, the question arises then automatically, then Maharaj, why did you accept the disciples? Now, I did that, I accepted disciples in different parts of the world because it was the it was the it was it this was what the GBC wanted, the ISKCON structure of management wanted. Like, if they want, if they desired, or if the plan is other, or if the standard was different, then I would have followed that standard. And here also I can probably remind you that at one time I stopped giving initiation. But then I realized that there are individuals who are waiting to take initiation from me, and it was unfair to continue, not giving initiation. And it was actually in England that I had to start giving initiation after stopping, and it was mainly because of Savitri Priya. Savitri Priya was very sick and she wanted to take initiation from me, and I felt that I have to. And another realization came at that time was that I felt that ISKCON is functioning in a certain way, and if I don't comply to that, then I am actually causing some sort of disturbance. Like, the society is going in a certain way, and if I don't comply to that, then it would cause disturbance and create confusion in the minds of at least some individuals. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that I want to make it very clear to you all that your spiritual life or your spiritual progress is not solely dependent upon your relationship with your spiritual master alone, with your initiating spiritual master. Like, you are a part of the institution, you're a part of a society. So your spiritual progress is actually dependent upon the relationship with the society in general, where Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya. And as the founder acharya, Prabhupada is the main spiritual shelter. And then there are other devotees. There are senior devotees, there are other spiritual masters, there are other sannyasis, there are GBCs, local GBC. Then you have your temple president, then you have other senior devotees in the temple who are guiding you in your spiritual life. And in this way, your spiritual life is being taken care of by the system that has been so expertly organized by Srila Prabhupada. And it is important that you recognize that. Like, in plain and simple words, I will say that so often you become so eager to cook for your spiritual master and feed him. Now, don't just limit it only to your spiritual master. Extend your expertise, display of your expertise and attitude to the other senior devotees. And as a result of that, you'll see how you are making spiritual advancement. Like, just consider the result of it. If you are just sticking to one person only, then you're missing out on the wonderful arrangement that Srila Prabhupada made. And not only that, you are actually narrowing yourself. You're failing, you're missing out on this opportunity to take the mercy from so many sources when it is so wonderfully available. Right? Like, what Srila Prabhupada gave is such a magnanimous display of mercy, an opportunity of receiving mercy. So just receive that, you know, why limit yourself? Spiritual life is dependent upon recognizing the greatness of other Vaishnavas. Now in this respect you consider the Kanishtha Adhikari Dak Bhakta, Madhyam Adhikari Bhakta and Uttam Adhikari Bhakta. Do you know the difference or the definition? Who is a Kanishtha Adhikari Bhakta? What is the definition of a Kanishtha Adhikari? A neophyte devotee. Who knows? The definition of a neophyte devotee is one who recognizes Krishna but doesn't recognize Krishna's devotees. But who is a Madhyam Adhikari devotee? And who has developed love for Krishna? And who has developed friendship with Krishna's devotees? Who has compassion for the innocents? And who has disregard for the offenders? Now, what is the difference here between Kanishtha Adhikari and Madhyam Adhikari? Third-class devotee and second-class devotee, what's the difference? The difference is, the third-class devotee recognizes Krishna but doesn't recognize his devotees. Isn't it? Now, and who is the first-class devotee? Uttam Adhikari devotee. Who sees that everybody else became a devotee, only he couldn't become a devotee. Now see the gradual progression. A neophyte devotee thinks only he is the devotee and no one else could become a devotee. Right? Whereas a first class devotee is, he sees everybody else as a devotee and thinks that, feels that he himself couldn't become a devotee. Now let us extend this concept a little more. Like, another kind of neophyte devotee is who only sees his spiritual master as a devotee or spiritual master and no one else is a spiritual master. Right? He is a Kanishtha Adhikari. He is a neophyte. It will be a stage. One will feel that way at a certain stage and that's undeniable. But what will happen when he makes advancement? He will recognize others who are guiding him in his spiritual life also as spiritual masters. Isn't it? Initially he will think only his initiating spiritual master is the spiritual master. No, he doesn't recognize anybody else. But when he makes advancement, then he sees that many other senior devotees, advanced devotees, are also his spiritual master. And that then, at a very advanced stage, what he'll see? He will see that everybody else is a spiritual master and he is their disciple. Everyone else is guru and he is the only disciple. So that is how the spiritual life actually progresses. So here I'm trying to make quite a few points. Please consider them carefully. The first point that I wanted to make was the importance of the institution ISKCON and importance of being a part, recognizing yourselves as parts of ISKCON. We're all of us actually the parts of ISKCON. We all are different parts of ISKCON. Whether we are spiritual masters or whether we are a new bhakta, we all belong to ISKCON. And we are functioning under the authority structure of ISKCON. The final authority, the ultimate authority is Srila Prabhupada in this structure. Isn't it natural? that since Srila Prabhupada founded this institution, he is the natural leader of this institution. And he will remain that. The GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. In Prabhupada's own words, in this structure, in this institution, the gurus are not the ultimate authority. The GBC is the ultimate authority. For example, if the GBC tells me today, Bhaktacharya Maharaj, you stop giving initiation, I have to stop giving initiation. If they say that it has happened in the past, the GBC said, told the gurus that they can't function as gurus. And they had to abide by that. Of course, unfortunately, many individuals left the movement because they didn't want to accept the authority of the dictates of the GBC. But the natural thing would be, like when the GBC sees that someone is not really is fit to be a guru, the GBC will tell you that, okay, you can't function as a guru. And they have to accept it. But because we are functioning within an institution, we have to abide by the authority of the institution. In this society, no one is actually inheriting this institution. That was the unfortunate phase at one time after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. You know, a group of gurus thought that they inherited this. And it created a lot of problems in the society, and eventually they themselves had to go. Now it became clear that no one is actually inheriting this institution. Like if that happens, then the society will fall apart. To keep the institution together, we have to recognize that the sole proprietor of this institution is Srila Prabhupada. And that is the meaning of the word founder actually. And we all are his servants, no matter who we are. We all are his servants. And we have to function in that way. As Srila Prabhupada's servants, whether we are gurus or whether we are new bhaktas. We all are Srila Prabhupada's servants. And that way, how do we serve Srila Prabhupada? We serve Srila Prabhupada through serving the institution. We abide by Srila Prabhupada by abiding by the authority structure of this institution. And the second point I'm making is that don't see that your spiritual master is the only personality who is helping you in your spiritual It is not that just by being initiated, you have attained the ultimate perfection. Actually, initiation, the word itself implies that it's just the beginning. And when you become initiated, what actually happens? You become situated in your spiritual platform. And in that platform, what do? You start to act in a spiritual way. And how do you act in a spiritual way? By recognizing the greatness and glories of others who are helping you in your spiritual life. Starting from Srila Prabhupada down to the insignificant new bhakta in the movement, you'll see how everyone is actually helping you in your spiritual life. The more you make advancement, the more that point will become clear. But first of all, recognize how Srila Prabhupada is actually helping you in your spiritual life. Do you recognize how Srila Prabhupada is actually helping you in your spiritual life? The books are the basis. Whose books are those books? Srila Prabhupada's books. That's the basis through which we are actually making spiritual progress. Through which the spiritual sky is becoming revealed to us. So, this is the second point. And the third point that I wanted to make is try to broaden the concept of your spiritual master. Like initially you may think only a initiating spiritual master is your spiritual master. But then you recognize that there are others who are also actually guiding in your spiritual life. And be grateful to them. And more you become grateful to those who are helping in your spiritual life, more you will make progress. And try to serve them the way you feel inspired to serve your spiritual master. And see what happens. You will see how enriched you will be from within. And then become engaged in the service. Spiritual life means service. Spiritual life ultimately boils down to that one simple factor, service. Well, in order to understand the point, try to consider what is materialistic. What is materialistic way of life? Material life means exploit for the sake of sense gratification, isn't it? In a materialistic life, in the materialistic world, what everyone is trying to do, they're simply trying to exploit everyone else for their sense gratification. Now, diametrically opposite is the spiritual life. So what is the spiritual life? What is the opposite to exploitation? A lord over. Serve. Now, serve whom? Everyone is serving somebody or other. But serve the Supreme Personality of God and His devotees. And Krishna is saying that those who think that they are my devotees, they are not my devotees. Those who are the devotees of my devotees, they are actually my devotees. So recognize the devotees and serve them. Serve under their guidance. And your sign of advancement is actually in the service attitude that you develop. Who is an advanced devotee? The real advanced devotee is he who has developed the most intense service attitude. It's more advanced. Advancement is synonymous to one's service attitude. Just continue, just serve. Try to serve in whichever way it's possible. And then you'll see the result. And what will be the result? The result will be an incredible joy from within. An experience of an incredible joy from within. And that is what we all are here for. In a material world, everyone is suffering. They're trying to lord over, they're trying to exploit, but what is the ultimate result? The ultimate result is suffering. Whereas in spiritual life, one becomes a menial servant, a humble servant. Apparently it seems that, oh, he is such a fool. Look, he's being exploited by everybody else. He's being exploited by the Hare Krishna. But he himself will see from within what he is experiencing. And that is why he will continue to stay in ISKCON and continue to serve and increase his service. So that is why we all are here. So, let us have, these are the three main points that I wanted to make today. Please recognize the importance of the institution of ISKCON and the importance of your being in ISKCON. Recognize what ISKCON is giving you and appreciate it and take advantage of it. Recognize the devotees around you and see how much they're helping you in your spiritual life, and as an expression of your gratitude towards them, just try to do something for them. Serve them. And
and be recognized by Krishna. And develop the service attitude. Try to serve, like in whichever way it's possible. Try to render your service to the institution. And it is not that, oh, now I'm a brahmana, I'm a second initiate, so I won't go and sweep the street. No. Or I won't wash the pots. Don't you know that I'm a brahmana? Look at my brahmitri. The attitude should be, I am the servant of the servant of the servant. That is what a Vaishnava is. So please develop this attitude. Become more humble than a bird of grass. It's not easy. But it is easy. When you make that endeavor, then you will see how easy it is. Because by doing that, you experience the joy. And that's why it becomes so easy. To surrender is not difficult. To become small is not difficult. To try to become big is difficult. Everyone wants to become big. That is the nature of this material nature. That's the characteristics of the material nature. In this respect, I often give an example of a wrestling bout. Like at the beginning of the wrestling, if one says, surrender, and he falls flat on the ground, right, then he won't have to struggle. Isn't it easy? Surrender. But in order to not to surrender, they are making so much struggle, getting hurt, exerting themselves in such an incredible way. Now, this struggle is against Krishna. It's a matter, what we are doing is we are wrestling with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are telling, no, we are not going to surrender, we are not going to surrender. And look at the struggle. But if you just say, Krishna, I surrender, and fall flat on your back, and let Krishna pin you down. But Krishna doesn't pin you down. The thing is, the moment you say surrender, what does Krishna do? You may fall down, you may try to become smaller than a blade of grass. But what will Krishna do? Krishna will pick you up and embrace you. Now tell me, what can be more ecstatic than that experience? And that is why we all are here. We all are here to just surrender unto Krishna and experience the joy of the spirit. And now tell me, when your heart becomes filled with the joy of Krishna consciousness, what else do you need? Then all the opulence of this world, all the recognition of this world will become completely insignificant. Just like when you get $1,000,000, do you care for one or two pennies? When you get £1,000,000, do you care for one or two pounds? That's how insignificant material accomplishments and material recognitions become. When you become recognized by Krishna and embraced by Him. So here, we all are here for one purpose, that is to make spiritual advancement. And let's do that. Let's move in the right direction. I am your spiritual master only as long as I can guide you in the right direction. If I fail to guide you in the right direction, then I am not your spiritual master. And I will be accountable to Srila Prabhupada, I'll be accountable to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'll be accountable to Radharani and Krishna. They'll ask me, we gave you some recognition, responsibility, and what did you do? And I am constantly aware of that. That I, Prabhupada, is going to ask, what are you doing? What are you doing? I gave you such an important responsibility, and what are you doing out of it? And I know, if I guide you in the right direction, Prabhupada will be pleased. that is what is going to make me properly situated myself in my spiritual life. That is how I am going to make spiritual advancement. A leader must lead. And one must lead by giving them the right direction and showing them the right way to progress and help them in that way to progress. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Maybe I'll do one thing. I didn't have the darshan of the deities today. So now the curtain is open now, 9 o'clock. So I'll just go for darshan, and if you all want to continue, I'll come back. Or maybe you all can come, you can go down, have a little kirtan, and then we can again continue the session. Okay? Thank you. And in the meantime, you formulate your question.
Jai Shri Prabhupada.
All glory to that Sambhuddha.
Amen.
Difficulty will be overcome.
Actually, it would have been better if they didn't leave. Right? If they continued, then, naturally, ISKCON would have been much stronger today. But, ISKCON incurred so many losses due to individuals who were given the responsibility who failed. Yes.
Maharaj, the way I see it is they all did the best of their abilities. And what happens now is people go away or people so fall down, it becomes more real in society.
Becomes more real. That's true.
I see somebody as a human being with the full effects. Instead of somebody who's pretending as a big guru, all the kilas and all the dharmas and all that, rather see the person come real.
And the reality is, of course, it is, one should not fall down.
What is
bigger? No, my point is, if one practices Krishna consciousness properly, then he will never fall down. Whether he's a big guru or whether he's a new bhakta. But if somebody fails to practice the process the way Srila Prabhupada gave, then he'll have spiritual difficulties. And that's the reality. But the thing is, the institution must continue with Srila Prabhupada's. Institution means the collective society that has been given. It may comprise of individuals, but institution doesn't mean individuals.
Well,
the individuals may be... let's not get into disagreement. Try to understand what I'm talking about. Right? The thing is that we are not denying the individual, but I'm saying the institution doesn't mean individuals. Institution is institution. Individuals will come and join the institution. They will constitute the institution, but the institution is not just the individual. The individuals with the principles, those who are following the principles and the standard that has been given by the institution. What if the individuals are there, but if they are not following the standard, then what will happen to the institution? So that's the point I'm trying to make. Like, just not the individuals, but the individuals following the standard that has been given by Srila Prabhupada.
So
that's what the institution
is. Individuals.
Fine, let's not try to understand the point that I'm making. Right? The institution is given by Srila Prabhupada.
It's got something internal.
Okay, maybe we can discuss later. Try to understand what I'm saying. The thing is, we're not denying the individuals, but I'm saying the institution is not just the individuals. That's the point I'm making. Not just the individuals. Institution is more than the individuals. Institution must have a standard. Institution must have a motto. Institution must have a policy. Right? And that is what has been given by Srila Prabhupada through his books, through his instruction. That's the point I'm making. Not just individuals, but something more than the individuals. other questions? Yeah, Shruti Dharma Prabhu.
You're speaking about disciples, devotees, and the principle of cooperation in serving. One obstacle that seems to hinder devotional progress is the principle of envy. We tend to envy other disciples, perhaps, we have other individuals. This greatly hampers an individual's progress. Hmm. It seems to come at various stages of an individual's spiritual life, unknowingly. What's the remedy? When individuals see the alarm lights going on,
One of the most important remedy towards that is that senior devotees, leading devotees, should be very careful that they do not allow this envy to grow. Right? Don't give opportunities for individuals to become envious. And that's why we all have to become very humble. Like if you become more humble than a blade of grass, then no one will envy you. If you become tolerant, then, you know, where is the room for envy? And so that is, you know, you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the most perfect system. And if we follow that system, there won't be any room for envy. And so that is the first consideration. The second consideration is that we must educate everyone in such a way that they realize that they haven't come to Krishna consciousness to breed or to harbor, you know, these negative propensities. And that means, you know, like, you know, teach the proper spiritual standard. Like, you see, envy is for material. I mean, envy is a material thing, material phenomena, for the material objects. Right? Like, no one actually becomes envious of one's spiritual progress. Right? Rather, one becomes envious of one's, you know, material position or display of one's prowess and accomplishments. So, individuals on leadership position should be careful that they don't allow this tendency to breed. That's the first thing. And then the second consideration is, make them recognize that actually we have come to Krishna consciousness not for any material benefit. We have come here for spiritual benefit. So if somebody is getting some material benefit, there's no need for us to become envious of him. Like, we haven't come for that. So envy means, you know, desire for something that we do not have. And when you don't have, we become envious of that person. Why he has, why don't I? Right? But if I realize that that's not actually what I want, there's no need for us to become envious. Like, say, for example, somebody is accumulating a lot of dirt, right? Now, if I value dirt, then I'll become envious of him. Why he has so much dirt, right? But if I realize that dirt doesn't have any value to me, I mean, I don't need dirt, you know, what am I going to do with it? Then, you know, no matter how much dirt he collects, I won't become envious of him. So we have to be constantly reminded of what actually we need, why we are here, what we actually want. And if we become concerned about the right thing, like, you know, if we become aware of what we actually want, then, you know, envy will not be, there won't be any room for envy. Like, I haven't heard anybody becoming envious of somebody's Krishna prema. Right? Although sometimes we use the expression, I'm envious of your spiritual advancement, you know? But in reality we actually don't mean that. Rather, we feel happy about your spiritual advancement. aspect. Then actually if we are properly situated, then we'll aspire to develop that spiritual advancement ourselves. Does it answer the question, Shruti Dhamma Prabhu? Is there any other question? Yes. So let me answer this point. You see, if everybody functions in his right, in a right way, then there won't be any conflict. If the GBCs function in a right way, if the gurus function in a right way, if they all actually function as a part of ISKCON, then there won't be any conflict. The conflict will be there when, you know, they don't work in perfect harmony. Right? That's the point I'm making, that when that consideration is there, then my point is the GBC is more important in the context of the society than the Guru. Because the Guru is representing the institution. Guru is not the absolute authority of the disciples in ISKCON. Because the Guru is relative to the society. Right? And the gurus must function, you know, under the authority structure. The authority structure is the GBC body, the temple president, and so on and so forth. And when they function in that way, then everything will be harmonious. Right? So the guru gives initiation, and he helps the disciples to function under the temple authority and render service under their guidance to the temple. There won't be any conflict. Right? But if the guru gives initiation and takes his disciples away from the temple, then there will be conflict. Then the temple authorities will say, I mean, look, we trusted you, that you are going to help the situation, you helped the individuals to become properly engaged in their service. And now instead of helping them, helping the temple and engaging them in the service of the temple, you are taking them away. Now is it fair? Is this desirable? I will say no. So that's the point that I'm trying to make. So now tell me, what's your second question?
You said what's the stage of progress which not only depend on his
Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. Yes.
So I was saying that if one's spiritual progress depends not only on the guru but also on the institution, does it mean that the institution acts as part of function like a guru, the ISKCON, GBC, or the institution as a whole?
Yeah, the institution is the institution of gurus and disciples. Right? Where Srila Prabhupada is the guru. Right? And everyone else in ISKCON is a subordinate guru. The GBCs are gurus, temple presidents are gurus, initiating spiritual masters are gurus, the Bhakta program leader is a guru, right? Departmental head is a guru, right? So we have to see them, see all the gurus, right? So it is not that, you know, like guru means only initiating spiritual masters, right? The guru means whoever is helping me in my spiritual life is my guru. And that way you have to see if a new bhakta is helping me in my spiritual life, he is my guru. Right? It's not a just stamped designation, but it is a status according to the responsibility one is shouldering. And the more we develop this concept, more we develop this understanding, the more we'll make spiritual advancement. And more we'll benefit the institution to spread Krishna consciousness more effectively throughout the world. So ultimately it's a matter of our becoming engaged in the institution which has an objective to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. What is ISKCON meant for? Is ISKCON meant for just some devotees, some gurus to come and give initiation and make disciples? Just that? Huh? Or what is the purpose of ISKCON? Why did Srila Prabhupada create ISKCON?
To further
Sankirtan movement. Huh? And how that is done? By propagating Krishna consciousness, by helping people to join the Krishna consciousness movement, by individuals becoming trained up to become devotees of Krishna, by assisting the devotees to further the mission by spreading Krishna consciousness. So that's the objective of this institution, and we have to be careful that we are properly engaged in those activities. Isn't it Shruti Dharma Prabhu? Okay, so do you have any more questions? Yes, Pujari.
What is the position of the practitioner who, while trying to serve or trying to develop a mood of humility, ends up feeling disappointed?
Okay. Well, he should consider, he or she should consider himself or herself very fortunate. Because our business is to become exploited by Krishna and his devotees. So the more we become, you know, surrender means, you know, allowing ourselves to be engaged. Now why, if somebody engages me in Krishna consciousness, why should I consider that to be exploitation? Or even if somebody exploits, right, then there are two considerations. One should realize that why should I be exploited, and he uses his intelligence and doesn't allow that to happen. The other consideration is, like if he's more advanced, then you know what he'll do? It's okay, let him exploit me. After all, I have come to become exploited by Krishna, and here is Krishna's representative who is exploiting me, and Krishna is seeing me from within my heart, my attitude, and he will reward me, he will recognize me.
It,
as I mentioned, like, it will depend upon the degree of your advancement. A less advanced devotee will use his intelligence and try not to be exploited. That's fine also. I mean, if it is real exploitation. But a more advanced devotee will allow himself to be exploited even more, thinking that this is Krishna who is testing me. Right? So it's a matter of degree of our advancement. I mean, I'm not saying that one should artificially try to, you know, act like a more advanced devotee when he or she is not. Act from the platform where one is in. Like if you feel that being exploited is hurting you and hurting your faith in Krishna consciousness, then yes, don't allow yourself to be exploited. Use your intelligence. But if you are advanced enough, when you are thinking that, well, I am solely surrendered to Krishna, let Krishna decide what he wants to do with me. And after all, what am I losing? Everything belongs to Krishna, and if Krishna is taking everything away from me, I mean, what's the harm? Let Krishna take everything. Let Krishna even take myself.
But, like, for example, when the manor was being closed down by the local council and everyone decided to fight it, at that point we didn't say, you know, maybe Krishna wants to close down. Okay,
yeah. So there is a difference. One is me being exploited and when Krishna's property is being usurped. Right. This is Krishna's property. This is Krishna consciousness movement. When it comes to protecting Krishna consciousness movement, I will fight like Hanuman. Right? Or I'll fight like Pandavasenas. Yes, Adhanan.
You made it very clear that Gurus and Iskcon are, if he wants to say, one as things to evolve, that they're supposed to speak as one unit almost, that they are one team, Gurus versus Iskcon. The same, does it not make it more difficult when different Gurus have different standards or process of initiation? Like some perhaps do initiation easier than others, first and second, or those who perhaps come through certain countries more than others, and so forth. So does that not make it more difficult to see the guru as one, as all gurus as one body, as it were? Because, for example, if someone was to get initiation, because they have to choose a guru who gives quicker than the other one, then they're given automatically, perhaps they can give class or so on and so forth, they may be given a higher social status with the Vaishnava name. And yet, the other person may be holding back, because choosing guru who's perhaps not initiating for a long time, but is almost given perhaps a suffering, a lower social status because they're still perhaps so and so. I just wonder, is that very difficult to use?
Yeah. Well, the initial response to that will be, you see, if everyone is functioning, if all the gurus are functioning for the sake of the institution or for the sake of Srila Prabhupada's movement, then, you know, even though they may have different standards, it don't really matter. Because ultimately the result is going to, you know, the main point, right? So that is one thing, one aspect of my response. The other aspect of my response will be that as an institution, there should be one standard. And then ultimately, if different individuals are kind of, you know, according to their own, you know, consideration, have their standard implemented, that's another thing. But the general standard should be one. And the general standard is that the candidates are, you know, authorized or approved by the temple authorities. It's not that the gurus are deciding, you know, who is qualified to take initiation or not initially. It is the temple authorities that actually recommend that, okay, now he is ready for initiation. But now it's up to the individuals, the gurus, whether they will give initiation or they want to make further consideration of waiting or training. But ultimately, all the candidates are being engaged in the service of ISKCON. That's what really matters. That's clear? I mean, you can't really deny that, you know, like you can't really standardize that everybody has to act in a certain pattern. The individuals will have their different considerations. That cannot be denied. Right? Like, you know, some will be easy to give, easy towards, you know, about giving initiation, and some others may be more difficult. But the main consideration is that all the candidates must be approved by the temple authority and recommended by the temple authority. There the gurus cannot interfere. Like even one who is very liberal in giving initiation, he may be very liberal in giving initiation, but he won't be able to give initiation unless and until the candidates have been recommended by the temple. Yes.
You mentioned earlier on that service to Vaishnava, to the institution, is joyful. And you enjoy it in the heart. But sometimes you don't feel joyful in the heart when you're serving. Why is that?
Something is wrong with you.
So how can you cure it?
By continuing to serve and waiting to experience the joy. You know, the process, the main thing is that Krishna consciousness is a very ecstatic process. Like consider, you know, ever since you joined ISKCON, has your life become joyful or miserable? More difficult in which way?
Okay, I have two very young daughters. From the beginning, if I took them out, you know, I can't give them food cooked from outside. I couldn't go into a restaurant like other moms. Oh, I don't have to cook today. You know, we need to any restaurant gives them chips or whatever. I have to cook my own food.
Okay, good. So now, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you preventing your children from eating food from outside and taking the trouble to cook food at home? And
because I want to give them the advantages that I didn't have.
Why? No, you said advantages. What are those advantages?
Having prasad, not associated with my
Why have prasad? Now tell me, why are you doing all that? Isn't there an element of joy behind it? Didn't you find that this is better, that's why you're pursuing this?
It is better, definitely. I'm just saying, it's definitely more difficult because we're very limited by our choices.
Yeah.
We can't take a kid here.
Yeah, when you take to spiritual life, your material activities or material involvements become difficult. So what you're actually saying that you materially you're feeling difficulties, but spiritually how are you feeling? So that's what I mean. So spiritually you feel fine. So ever since you joined the movement, did your life become miserable or joyful?
Material life definitely became more difficult.
Did you join the movement for your material prosperity?
No.
Okay.
But I'm limited by my material.
And that's why you have to try to get out of this material nature and go back to God.
Okay.
And the more difficult material life becomes, it's actually a benediction. You realize how difficult material life is and you say, I don't want to be here. I don't want to stay here. Who wants to be here and suffer? So where do you want to go?
Well,
okay, thank you.